prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
Hey, welcome to Truth Revolution, where faith meets reason. We're going to show you that you don't have to get rid of one to appreciate the other. I'm Dave, and with me at my right is Jeff, a man that I admire and a mind that I enjoy.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. That was totally unnecessary, but I really do appreciate that. I am looking forward to today's show. Mm-hmm. We are going to question some tradition. We're going to push some people to the edge of their brain to see if they can think logically about faith.
It's true.
And about God and whether or not he actually exists.
That's right. Before we dive into this, let's tell them a little bit about ourselves.
Okay.
You are the pastor.
I am a pastor at Revolution Church. And one of the things we do at Revolution Church, well, just like mostly all churches, you know, we are there to worship God, to teach people about God. But we try very, very hard to do it in a way that helps people be able to focus and to learn. And, you know, I grew up, and sometimes I would go to a church that was just life draining. It was you stop snoring. It was bad. And so we try to do things in a way that, you know, we can engage our minds and think and it be enjoyable at the same time. You know, we do kind of rock music at the church and whatnot. And so we do questions like we're doing here today. You know, we're going to answer people's questions if they want to call in. We're going to talk about how do we know God is real? How do we know the Bible's true? I mean, anything like that. And that's kind of what our church is like, too.
Right on. So we would like to invite you out. We'll do it Saturday nights.
At 7 o'clock. At 7 o'clock on South Street, kind of across from Ace Hardware.
Right on. And like Jeff said, we're going to be taking questions a little bit later on. 823-9596 is one number. The 800 number is 1-800-608-1150. Or if you're on your Verizon or U.S. cellular phones, it's *1150, and that would be free on those carriers. And then also questions at truthrevolution.tv.
Yeah, you can go to our website, truthrevolution.tv. It's not a full-fledged website yet, but it's got all the connection information you need to ask questions.
Excellent.
Truthrevolution.tv.
And on Twitter, at Revolution.
Yep.
And then on Facebook, Revolution Church.
Absolutely. So if you have any questions about God, spirituality, how do we know God is real, stuff like that, call in, let us know, hit us up.
Yeah, we're not connected at all.
So, because this morning we're actually talking about God's existence. Is it reasonable to think that God exists? Do you think it is, Dave?
I think it's reasonable, but I mean, you know, I've been a believer for years, but there is a lot of people out there who are stuck in that whole thing, you know, where people believe like, well, we've grown up as a race, you know,
as humans,
human race, and we've grown up and, you know, we're in the 21st century now, Buck Rogers and stuff like that. But we should leave all the mumbo-jumbo behind is what a lot of people think of. They think of it as superstition.
Oh, like God is superstition.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, let's leave that away. Let's go ahead and go on towards higher thinking for ourselves.
Yeah, I had played in a band, and the guitar player that I played with, it was a Christian band, but now, and that was in high school. He now is an atheist, and I asked him the other day, I was like, why did you become an atheist? You know, what's up with that? And he said, basically, I grew up. I realized, you know, God, this magic dude in the sky was just a imaginary friend.
Wow.
And so, yeah, but and that's the question, because, you know, if God is real, that's really, really, really important. I mean, there's not much more important, or there's not much bigger deal than a God who created the entire universe who we can actually get to know.
That is a big deal.
That is about the biggest deal. So if he's real, if he's not the tooth fairy, then this is something we want to talk about.
It is. Definitely, because it's impacting on everybody's life.
And so the question is, how do we know God isn't like the tooth fairy? How do we know this isn't something that we just believe because everybody told us to believe it?
Right.
Because that's a terrible reason to believe something. I mean, people tell you all sorts of stuff all the time. And just because someone tells you, or just because your parents told you as you're growing up, whether they told you to believe in God or not to believe in God, that's not a very good reason to believe in God.
Right. Now, you should question everything.
Question everything. I mean, don't get me wrong. Parents should teach their kids about God, definitely.
Right.
But that's not a good reason to believe in something just because your parents did.
Excellent.
The question is, do we have logical reasons to believe in God? And I think we do. We're going to look at science, we're going to look at statistics, we're going to look at logic, all sorts of things to understand that God is real.
Right on. Well, show us. Tell us why God is real. I'm going to play the devil's advocate today.
Okay, devil.
Stop.
Devil Dave.
That just made me creepy. Anyway, so just prove it. Let's do it.
Okay. All right. Well, I want you to go on a walk with me.
Okay.
We're gonna leave the studio here for a second, and Now we've all arrived in a rainforest. We are in the middle of the Amazon, middle of nowhere. I mean, you are days and days away from anything in civilization, okay? Mm-hmm. Are you picturing this, people on the radio? If you need to, close your eyes, unless you're driving. Then just close one of them, all right? You're in the Amazon. You haven't seen anybody for days. You know you are the only person that has ever been in this part of the forest
right.
for maybe 100 years, for maybe 1,000 years. You're walking. You're walking through this tall grass. You're walking past some trees. You start realizing, man, this place is old. No one's ever been here, and so you start looking around. This is amazing, and all of a sudden, you start walking. You come to a little tiny trail, and you look down, and there is a watch on the ground.
How'd that get there?
It's a good question. You pick it up, and it's a Rolex. Not only is it a Rolex and it's a watch, but it's still on time. It's still ticking. The second hand is right on. The minutes, the hours are on. It's made of gold. The word Rolex can clearly be read on top. Now, when you find this watch in the middle of the forest that you thought I was the only person that was ever here, what is your first assumption?
That it sprung up out of the ground.
No. Wrong answer. Right. We know that it didn't spring up out of the ground. How do we know that?
Well, because it's, I mean, things like that just don't appear.
Right. You cannot just accidentally create a Rolex watch on time and ticking away on accident. I mean, you're not going to be walking in the middle of the rainforest and be like, wow, I found this watch. I guess the grass weaved it together. I guess the dirt plotted it down and a rabbit came and did his business and just all kind of melted together in the rainforest heat with all the humidity. Some lightning zapped it and boom, we got a Rolex watch.
Interesting.
That doesn't happen. I mean, if you ever put a bunch of gears in a box and start shaking it up like crazy, it doesn't matter how long you shook it. It would never form a perfect Rolex watch ticking on time.
Really? Because if it could be done, everybody be doing it.
Build your own Rolex box. that just doesn't happen. Now, the reason we know that it doesn't happen is because of something we call, if you're into big words, the teleological argument.
That is a mouthful.
All right, so we know that you can't find a watch in the middle of the forest that sprung up by accident. You know a human being was there and put the watch there or dropped it or an airplane dropped it or somehow a human being created that thing.
Right.
It wasn't an accident because it's very, very complex. This sort of thing just doesn't happen unless someone makes it happen.
But complexity, what would you say about the idea that complexity does not imply design?
Well, that's absolutely true, that just because something's complex doesn't mean it was designed by someone.
Right. So, look, check this out. Take my hair, for example. I woke up this morning.
You got great hair.
No, I'm wearing a hat right now. This morning, I wondered
why your hair was orange.
I woke up with an awesome case of bedhead. Now, my hair is going every which way, making me look like I could sing for The Cure. And the hairstyle wasn't designed. It just accidentally happened that way, but it looked good.
Oh, I see. So it's very complex because your hair is going this direction and that direction.
Right.
And you didn't design it. It just ended up that way. And
just
it's very
accident.
Complex. Yeah, like I could take a bunch of marbles and drop them on the floor. And the pattern that they created would be a very complex pattern, but it was not designed at all. Just because something's complex doesn't mean that someone designed it. I agree with you. We're not talking about mere complexity here. We're talking about complexity and what's called specificity. And this is how we know God created the universe
okay.
and our world. Because our world is complex, like a Rolex watch, but it's also very specific. Okay, I dropped the marbles down. It's very complex, the pattern, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't create it. It's just complex, but it's not very specific. I'm looking at a soundboard across from me here in the radio station. If I were to open that up, it's very complex inside. I mean,
yes.
There are tons of wires and buttons and knobs and solder points and little joints here and transistors. I mean, it's very complex. The engineer's popping it open right now. He just wants to take a look. I mean, there's
Holy
all
moly.
Sorts of stuff in there. I mean, that is crazy looking. But not only is it complex, it's very, very specific. You have to have those wires going in the right place. You have to have the transistors fastened to the right thing. You have to have the knobs in the right place so that when you push the knob up, the volume gets louder. When you pull it down, the volume gets quiet. I mean, it is very, very specific.
So if we bring a monkey in here, a monkey engineer, not like the good one we have, and he starts pulling wires,
it's going to break. because this is a very complex and specific type of machine, just like your computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fact that it's very specific knows that someone designed it. That means we know someone designed it, because you couldn't just throw all that in a box and out comes a bunch of wires attached and wow, it made a perfectly working soundboard on accident.
Right.
So we know, because it's complex but also very specific in its design, someone had to have created it. And this is how we know God exists.
Okay, but
God created our world, and our world's very complex, I think we would all agree, and it's very specific. Everything lines up just perfect for our existence, for life, for everything. I mean, it is so complex, it is so specific that there's only one conclusion. Someone must have designed this world.
And the designer?
That would be a designer. That's right.
Okay.
If you want, you know, let me give a couple examples of how complex and specific our world is, because I think this is kind of important.
Okay.
Let's talk about DNA. Because in the teleologic argument, what we're talking about here is, okay, if you find something that looks designed, you know there was a designer. Our world looks like it was designed, so our world must have had what?
A designer?
You're so smart, Dave!
No.
Okay, so just because we know when things are designed, there had to be a designer. If we look like we were designed, there had to be a designer. And so we're gonna look at our DNA, for instance. For DNA to work, you know, these two things with nucleotides swing up around each other. They call it like the right. ladder, you know. And in there is, you got A, T, C, and G. Okay, it's like adenine, thymine, all stuff we don't care about right now. A, T, C, and G, different types of your DNA. And when cells reproduce, these two rails go up together, and they connect together in certain ways. But for DNA to work, it's not enough just to have a whole bunch of A's, T's, C's, and G's strung together. It's not random at all. I mean, if you took a whole bunch of DNA and slapped it together, you're not going to end up with something alive. You're definitely not going to end up with a human being on the order of a normal person.
Right.
You know? So to have, it would be kind of like taking a whole bunch of Scrabble tiles and throwing them on the desk and being like, okay, let's see how many complicated words we found, except the alphabet would have to be like a million characters long, because that's how complicated it is to put DNA together. It just doesn't work. The nucleotides have to be arranged in a very specific manner at the right place. They have to form in the right time. They have to form in the right branches. I mean, this putting DNA together is really complicated. I tried to do it once, and I ended up with an ape man. It was really weird. No, I'm just kidding.
So, but you don't think that happens by chance?
No, because if just like you look at the letters in a sentence, and if you took a bunch of alphabet letters and threw them on the table, it's not going to form a very long sentence. You know,
true.
You might have a word like the that accidentally falls together with Scrabble tiles. You might have a word like, maybe even if you're really lucky, a word like chocolate. That's pretty unlikely.
Yeah.
Take a bunch of Scrabble tiles, throw them on the table, and see how many times chocolate comes out. I mean, it's very unlikely, but it's possible. But getting DNA together would be kind of like throwing all the letters in a book and having them come out in the right order.
Right.
I mean, that is just so unlikely.
Okay, let's take a little left turn here
real
quick. You know, we're talking about the difference between man-made objects that are obviously designed and then nature, which we're talking about is designed by God. But
sure.
George H. Smith in 1974 in his book, Atheism, The Case Against God, put this out there. He said, consider the idea that nature itself is the product of design. How could this be demonstrated? Nature, as we have seen, provides the basis of comparison by which we distinguish between designed objects and natural objects.
Okay.
We are able to infer the presence of design only to the extent that the characteristics of the object differ from natural characteristics. Therefore, to claim that nature as a whole is designed is to destroy the basis by which we differentiate between artifacts and natural objects. What do you have to say to that?
I think to that I would say that was a really long quote. No, well, I think, okay, essentially what he's saying is that nature is natural, so it wasn't designed. It just happens anyway.
Right.
Get over yourself, God people, right? Is that kind of what
that's
he's
exactly
saying?
What he's saying.
Okay, yeah, because like trees grow up by themselves. Like we don't have to design that. They just grow. That's kind of a good thought, except he's missing something. Where do the trees come from? How do they get designed? How do they end up so that they grow by themselves? You see, before the universe began, before trees existed, what was there, Dave?
There was nothing, according to science and the Bible.
According to science, there was nothing, right? It just wasn't there. I mean, there was nothing. And now, let me see how many of you out there know this. If you have nothing, what do you get from nothing?
nothing. I think there was a song in the 70s like that.
I don't know. But I'm glad you're smart enough to know nothing plus nothing equals nothing.
Right.
All right. We're not talking like college math here, right? This is pretty basic stuff. So if you start with nothing, you end up with nothing.
Right.
And so he's saying, well, trees are natural. But no, trees aren't natural. Nothing is natural. You start with nothing. Someone had to create something. So now we're getting into something besides the teleological argument, by the way. This is called the cosmological argument for those of you who like big words. But that's essentially what he's saying. Like, well, trees are natural. But no, they aren't. Nothing is natural. We start with nothing. We get nothing. Something created the design that makes trees. Something created this world and the things that work together, the ecosystem, the moon, our earth, the type of planet we have, our brains. These things are all so complex.
Yes.
And they're very specific. If we look at a watch, we're like, man, someone designed that. That was not an accident. And we know because it was so complex and it was so purposeful. We look at ourselves and the universe and the way everything works. There's no question, man. This had to have been designed by someone somewhere. You know, if anybody has any questions about this, go ahead and give us a ring. We'll be taking questions after our break here today.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to remind people they can call 823-9596.
Right. Or the 800 number, 800-608-1150. Or if you're on your Verizon or U.S. cellular phone, it'd be star 1150, and that would be free for those carriers.
Or you can go to our website, truthrevolution.tv, and check out any of the contact information there. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, email, phone calls, all that sort of stuff. And the show is streaming on KSAL, so just pull down the on-air tab, select the News Radio 1150 KSAL feed, and you'll hear us online there as well.
So, excellent.
If you are sitting in front of your computer and you want to turn that radio off, go ahead and hit that. But you know, let's before we get to the break here, I want to bring up a quote that I just love.
Okay.
Because sometimes we get the impression that science doesn't get along with faith.
Right.
Like, hey, I'm a scientist. Well, I'm a Christian. Well, I'm a scientist. Well, I'm a Christian. And it's like you get this little battle thing going on. That's not necessarily true. I mean, I think there are plenty of scientists. I know scientists who are Christians. And I know Christians who love science. So, first of all, let's throw this out of there, okay? This idea that science and Christianity aren't compatible. Let's just throw that out. That's ridiculous. But there are some scientists who are atheists. Some very high-level scientists who are atheists. One of them, in fact, his name's Robert Jastrow. He works for NASA. And he was talking about this teleological argument, about how the world was designed. And this is really interesting because Robert Jastrow is an astrophysicist for NASA.
Means he studies space.
Means he studies space.
I'm
very
smart.
Good, Davey. He studies space, and he was the director for the Goddard Institute at NASA. So, I mean, this is not your elementary school science teacher,
right,
who was very smart and respectable. This guy, though, is just
an important scientist.
Very important. This guy's genius level stuff. So he says, now we see how the astronomical evidence supports the biblical view of the origin of the world. You get that? He says right there, he's an atheist, but he believes that he picked up his science book, did all his studying, looked at the stars, did all the studying, then he looked at the Bible and went, whoa, it says the same thing.
And he's still an atheist.
Well, he is, because this is really interesting. He says, the essential elements in the astronomical and biblical accounts of Genesis are the same. And this is really funny. This is where he goes. He doesn't say, so maybe there's a God because science and faith are right. He says, consider the enormousness of the problem.
It's now a problem.
It's now a problem because he's an atheist. And he's like, this is a problem for me. Science, he says, has proved that the universe exploded into being at a certain moment. Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
It asks what cause produced this effect. Who or what put the matter and energy into the universe? And science cannot answer these questions. That's what he says. He goes, this is a problem for me. I'm an atheist. I'm a scientist and astrophysicist. And I realize I know exactly how the universe began. And the Bible says this is how the universe began. The Bible was right thousands of years before I was right.
Right.
And it matches up perfectly. And now I'm realizing this world was designed. Like something had to put this here. And his head's exploding because he's like, this is a problem for me as an atheist.
A problem that needs a solution.
A problem that needs a solution. And the solution is we don't have to throw God out of the window.
That's right.
We can say faith and science are reasonable. Let's do these.
We'll be back after the break. We're going to take some questions, so use those numbers and the addresses we showed you. We'll be right back.
Truth Revolution.
Hey, it's Truth Revolution with Dave
and Jeff. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Now, we are actually talking about the teleological argument today.
Hey, you said it the right way.
I did.
Basically, the teleological argument, if you're just joining us right now, says everything that looks like it was designed had a designer of some kind.
Right.
The world and us look like, and we really do have great design, so guess what? We must have had some sort of designer, and right. That would be the G-O-D. God. He designed us. And so, that you know, this is one of the great ways that we know God designed us. Hey, right. If you've got any questions out there, want to argue, debate, discuss, or just say what's up, give us a call, 823-9596, 823-9596.
Or at 800-608-1150, or if you're on your Verizon or US Cellular, that's *1150. That'd be free on those carriers.
That's right. You know, one thing that's kind of interesting about this whole thing is that a lot of people talk about how the church has rejected science.
Mm-hmm.
That's just really not true. You know, they always use this example of Copernicus. You know, hey, Copernicus, you know, he realized that, you know, the universe was big. Well, Hubble realized it was really big, but Copernicus mm-hmm. realized how big it was and that we weren't the center of the universe, and the church hated him for it.
Well, that's the general thought.
Yeah, have you ever heard people say that
yes.
sort of thing? I have too. But you know that's not true?
It's not.
No. Copernicus, actually, he made his discoveries, and the church was the one who told him, hey, you need to publish that stuff. In fact, the Archbishop, Nicholas Schoenberg, says he's talking to Copernicus. He wrote a letter in 1536, and he says, he's like, I learned that you had not merely mastered the discoveries of an ancient astronomers uncommonly well, but you formulated a new cosmology. And he's like getting excited. He goes, in it you maintain that the Earth moves and that the Sun occupies the lowest and center place in the universe. Therefore, with the utmost earnestness, I entreat you, most learned sir, unless I inconvenience you, to communicate this discovery to your scholars.
Wow.
This is the Archbishop of a church. I mean, and he's saying, dude, you got to get this stuff out there, Copernicus. This
right.
is the bomb.
It is.
So he says, Copernicus, the church's actual stance on Copernicus's discovery was publish that stuff.
And he did.
And he did. Actually, Copernicus even dedicated his book to the Pope.
Well, how did he get to the point to where everybody thought that the church hated him?
Well, we see, it started with kind of Galileo, and the church had a problem with Galileo.
Oh.
They made some mistakes with Galileo. They really did. The Catholic Church did.
Mm-hmm.
But it was mainly political. What Galileo was doing, they had some political problems with him, some personality problems, and they attacked him and his science for it. But you can see with Copernicus that if they've got evidence for their views, it's not completely rejected.
So you're saying that church and science, or faith and science, can exist together?
Absolutely. Right. You know, sometimes you get people who are just bullheaded and sometimes they don't accept things. But by and large, faith and science, I mean, it fits together like a glove. Because really, us Christians, what we're interested in is the truth.
Right.
We're not interested in fairy tales. We're interested in the truth. We believe God exists because there's great design in the universe. And you don't get great design without some sort of designer. So we think God exists. We want to know what's true. And scientists, by and large, are interested in the truth. How do things come to exist? What are the stars and the sun like? And that's the key there. We're interested in truth. Scientists are interested in truth. You know what? Truth is the same thing.
Right. Well, there's the quote from Voltaire. I believe that he was... around back in the Renaissance
okay.
era, and he said, talking about the teleological argument, or a form of the teleological argument, he said, from this sole argument, I cannot conclude anything further than that it is probable that an intelligent and superior being has skillfully prepared and fashioned the matter. I cannot
sure.
conclude from this alone that this being
bah.
Has made matter out of nothing.
Okay. So you
and that he's infinite in every sense. Sorry, another long quote.
So, no, that's cool. So, essentially, break down, give me Voltaire's thing in like half a sentence.
Half a sentence, basically, he's saying, sure, we can prove that that some higher intelligent being created the universe. We can't prove who he is and that he himself is, or in fact, a he, or...
I asked for half a sentence.
Sorry.
No, that's cool.
I'm wordy.
Voltaire says, okay, so something created, but we don't know what it was.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess he's right, but he doesn't really... That's not helpful in any way because he's just moving the problem one step backwards.
Right.
He's like, well, something created us, but maybe it wasn't God. Okay, well, what else do you call the creator of the universe? Yeah, and even if it wasn't, quote, God, who created that thing that created us.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He's
just...
It keeps going back and back.
Yeah, he's just playing semantics, you know? He's not really... He's kind of using a logical fallacy that basically says, well, you know, if I can shift around the names of the terms here and make people worry about it, then I win the argument. Well, that's not accurate. That's not a good way to play.
Well, then David Hume, sometime later, went totally the opposite direction.
David Hume.
Yeah, he pointed out that this argument does not necessarily lead to the existence of one God.
Yeah.
In his dialogues concerning natural religion, he said the character, his character Philo, argued, amidst other counter-arguments, is the teleological argument. Why may not several deities combine in contriving and framing of the world?
Okay, that's a good question. And the answer is, maybe it did happen that way.
That's true. We're not here to try and prove.
You see,
right now we're just trying to prove the existence.
That something created us.
Right.
Okay, I mean, I think in coming weeks and months, we're going to be able to prove that Jesus is God, that there's only one God, that the Bible's true, all those sorts of things. But all we're really talking about today is that the universe was designed, and someone designed it. And so, you know, he's saying, well, maybe it was multiple gods. When you only use the teleological argument, and don't call in with hate mail if you think there's only one God, okay? If you only use the teleological argument, logic says... one or more gods created the universe.
Right.
So we know that's true. One or more gods created the universe. I think in coming weeks and months, we're going to be able to prove that, you know, it was only one God and it was Jesus. But you know, for today's argument, he's right in that account. So.
Okay, well, I'm telling you, Revolution Church, I mean, we're full of questions like this. We answer questions like that. We're not afraid of questions. So if you like what you're hearing, if you want to be able to go to a church where we don't shy away from questions, go ahead and come on out.
7 o'clock on Saturday nights is Revolution Church. And we do the sermon there. I do the sermon, but we let people ask questions during the sermon. If they're curious about, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense what he said, they can text in a question with their cell phones and hit us up there.
And Jeff stops exactly what he's doing to answer these questions, so it's not a farce. It's something that people actually get answers to questions there. So.
And we get all sorts of crazy questions from the people at our church. Some of them are crazy. But it's a lot of fun being able to talk about God and church and ask questions and not be angry about it, but enjoy discussing questions.
Because you're learning.
That's right.
Hey, we got to go ahead and split out of here, but we'd like to thank the engineer real quick, Chris Abercrombie.
Thank you.
And our sponsor, Revolution Church.
Yes, Revolution Church.
Come out and see us. And this is Dave and Jeff.
Hit us up on SalinaRevolution.com if you want to check out our church, Revolution. And other than that, I hope that you guys have a truth revolution in your life, that God helps you and changes you. Remember, the bottom line is, we were designed by someone.